Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Robert Clancy. He is author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul, a collection of scenic views of volunteerism, transcendental encounters with kindred spirits, and lessons in compassion. This book is a soul-filled travelogue of experiences in which volunteerism is the catalyst for life-changing events and joyful interaction. The book was born from Robert's own passion to serve, which began when he was just 6 years old. He is an entrepreneur, inspirational speaker, ordained minister, and master martial arts instructor. Robert is a published author from the heart of upstate New York who experienced a life-defining spiritual experience at the age of 19 that he writes about in his upcoming book with the working title Soul Ciphers, Decoding a Life of Hope and Happiness. Today, he blends his beautiful consciousness into his business life as co-founder and managing partner of Spiral Design Studio, one of the largest full-service graphic design and web development firms in the Northeast. Balancing his corporate commitments with his lifelong love and compassion for humanity, Robert supports ongoing volunteerism within his business and his everyday life. His dedication to community at both regional and national levels inspires his team and encourages youth and professional leaders to step up and give back. For more information, you can visit his website, which is www.guidetothesoul.com. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Robert to the show. Good day. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. I did read The Hitchhiker's Guide, and I liked it. It was very good. It was easy to read, but it really has a lot of really good information for people to ponder.
Well, thank you. That's excellent. That'll add to the conversation today.
Exactly. Well, you know, we have to start with the title, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul. Can you maybe explain to the listeners why it is that you chose that as your title?
Sure. If you're probably familiar with the book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it was sort of inspired through that. In that book, it's a comedy, so it's a funny book. But you have Arthur Dent in that, and he's laying in front of a tractor preventing his house from being torn down to make room for a highway. And the Earth is about to be destroyed. He's not seeing the big picture. He's only seeing his house and really, you know, the whole thing's going. And then Ford Perfect comes along, who's an alien, and they start hitchhiking. And as they go through the galaxy, they seem to be getting further from where they're trying to go, but they end up right where they're supposed to be. So my title, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul, is really that inward journey. And I feel that we all have that, you know, the path is already set. You just have to find it and let life happen, and you'll be guided to where you need to be. So that's really where the title came from. And then I coined the soul hitches, which are really these interactions that we have between people. And I can elaborate on that in a few.
Yeah, that I liked that idea of soul hitches. Would you mind kind of explaining exactly kind of what that is? Because I'm not sure people will really kind of understand what a soul hitch is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And you know what? People have had these. And once I explain it, they're going to say, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. But I just put a phrase that has meaning to it so that you'll know when you're on one of those. But a soul hitch for me is when you have these interactions with other people, and it could be just sharing a smile with someone, and it's sort of it's almost like you're riding on their soul. I feel like we're all connected in some level. And you just travel. And I've had these chance encounters that happen, and, you know, where you're going through your day, you might be saying, okay, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z today, and this is what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, you're totally in another place, and you didn't even get any of those things done. And maybe even some frustration happens, but really, you've been guided somewhere else. And it's generally when you encounter, it could be just a random encounter at, you know, a throughway stop or in the car next to you, and it can change your outlook, your perspective, and it affects you in a deep level. So these are, you know, like, I feel like we're hitchhiking on each other as we go through life.
Yeah, and, you know, as I was reading the stories, there were many many of the occasions that you listed are things, you know, that I've experienced. And like you say, everyone has experienced. And it was really great to be able to kind of flash back to that moment when that happened and actually kind of put a kind of a, you know, connected to that phrase, kind of make it as, you know, it makes it easier to talk about the experience once you kind of have it defined.
Right. And some of these are, I feel like they're kindred spirits. And as you alluded to, you know, I had one of them at age 6, and it's almost like you know that person. It might be the first time you're meeting them, but you have that feeling that they're part of your tribe. And it's like, wow, I found them again. And, you know, you go through that. And that's really what these soul hitches are. It's reconnecting to some of these. I feel that these transcendental encounters, these people that are out there, and they're the guides. They're the ones that help you get back onto that road or stay on your road.
Yeah. Now, that age 6, was that Alex the pool man that you were talking about?
Yes. And, yeah, if you want me to go,
sure,
I can give
yeah.
you the short
yeah.
version of the story. But at age 6, my family and I went on I think it was a 3-week vacation in Jamaica. It was a huge thing. And it was back in 1971. I'm only 6 years old. I had to look back at the pictures and find out that I was only 6 because I felt older. And in reflecting on it, and it was on the first day I was there, I was sitting by the pool, and this man came by, Alex the pool man, as he introduced himself, and he was a Jamaican man, and he was wondering why I wasn't going in the pool, and I was afraid of the water because I had fallen in probably when I was 3, and I didn't know how to swim. I didn't want to have anything to do with it, and he was an expert swimmer, so he ended up teaching me how to swim and get over my fear of the water. So that was the first soul hitch I had with him. And he was probably about 18 to 20 years old. And what a, you know, he just had this light. And it was almost like we knew each other. And he felt that too, because I could sense it. And, you know, we were just like best friends. It was like, wow, we found each other again. This is awesome. And ended up falling in the pool later that week, in the first week I was there. And I probably would have drowned because at the time when I slipped in, there was no lifeguard on duty. There was no one around. And I accidentally fell in. And I was so excited that I was able to swim. And he was smiling ear to ear. And he said, I'm going to reward you. I'm going to take you to my secret collection of shells that I sell to tourists. And I'm going to let you pick out whatever you want. And he gave me a Coke bottle and said, you can fill this up with the small ones. And he had some shopping bags and said, whatever you want to take to your family. And so we went down the beach. And on the way, I see this purple balloon in the water, and I go running for it. And the next thing I know, I was flying through the air, and I had the wind knocked out of me as the balloon wrapped around his legs, and it turned out to be a Portuguese man-o-war jellyfish, which at my age and size, it probably would have killed me. You know, he told me there on the beach. And I started crying because I saw that it stung him, and he had these red marks all over his legs. And then he showed me the other scars that he had. And started telling me about the village that he came from and saying, this beautiful village, and I sell this coral to support my village. It's a beautiful place. And, you know, I just started picturing this in my mind. And I begged my parents to let me go to this village with him. And they worked it out with the resort and actually had me travel up there with him. And I, you know, in this day and age, I'm like, you let me go with some strange guy. But, you know, they're like, they said, we checked into him and, you know, he checked out. And he was such a beautiful person that, you know, you knew there was no issue there. And he, the whole time in the car, you know, he was just smiling ear to ear and he was telling me about everything. He took me to a place where they cut bamboo and made a little drum for me, a custom one. and he had all this stuff lined up for me, like this whole day. And I get to the village, and there's this big tree. It's an avocado tree. And all the kids are in, some of the kids are in the tree, and the other ones are in the village. And they're all smiling and laughing and waiting for me. Like, the whole village up there was, like, waiting for my arrival. And they started piling up fruit all around me. And I said, no, I'm just like you. You don't have to do anything special. And they put a crown of palm leaves on my head and then put me on a donkey and paraded me through the village. And I just remember seeing the ocean views and things. And it was the first time I saw also that kind of poverty. So I kind of asked him, I said, are you people poor people? And he started laughing, and he said, what we don't have in money and riches, we have the riches in our heart are so abundant. And there were no toys, and all the kids were happy, but their clothes were tattered. And I got back, and I told my parents, I said, when we leave, I want to give all of my clothes to them. And my parents had bought all brand new clothes for me to go on this vacation trip. And I only wore them once. And I only flew home with the clothes on my back. And I gave them that to that village. And I still have the shells that man gave me. They're on my desk at my office.
Wow.
And I have a Polaroid picture of him and I, and I've had it for 30 years.
That's something. Yeah, you know, it's one of those, I mean, that is one of those kinds of connections, and this, how everything unfolded. And like you say, you know, in today's environment, you know, kind of, you know, having a six-year-old go off with somebody you really don't know, you know, would,
right.
You know, especially in Jamaica. And I've been in Jamaica, so
yeah.
I know. You know that.
Well, back in 71, it was a little different probably than it is today.
Sure.
But, yeah, he was just such a beautiful person. And, you know, I would just love to reconnect with him. And it's actually, I was thinking, it's not 30 years ago. It's actually like 40-plus years ago. Sorry, I had the date wrong. But I've had those shells, and I still have them. And they mean a lot to me, because that was my first act of compassion. And he saved my life three times on that trip in three different ways, you know, by just showing me what true compassion is and what it means, that you don't need money to be happy.
That
was the gift.
That's great. That's great for someone 6 years old to have that experience, and then, you know, the insight, you know, and have that kind of guide you. You know, it's a wonderful thing.
Right. So that's a soul hitch. That's the top level soul hitch right there, and that's what I'm talking about in the book.
Okay.
So.
Top level. All right. Now,
one
of the, you know, you talk in the title, you talk about volunteerism. So now, when most people think about volunteering, we think of the, you know, working with a charity and that kind of thing. But you have a kind of a wider definition of volunteering. Would you mind sharing that with the listeners?
Sure. You know, and you defined it. You know, the classic version is, you know, I'm going to give my time and work in a soup kitchen or go and volunteer for an organization. And those are excellent examples. But mine, I believe it's anything you do to ease someone's day and to make their life a little bit better. And that could start with a smile. And I mention it a lot because the smile is the only tool that we carry with us every day. And how often do we use it?
Mm-hmm.
And think of the benefits. You know, when you smile, it's like contagious. You know, there people will smile back. It's just part of our nature. And we're the only creatures on this planet that can smile. You know, a dog can wag a tail, a cat can purr. We have a smile. And it's a beautiful tool to use. And it starts there. And it's really how you thread it through your life. And mine is, everything that you do has a volunteer component to it. Anytime that you're helping someone, you're making a call to your friend who's in need, or whatever it is to share that. And volunteerism starts there. And when it becomes part of your life or the DNA of your life, it becomes easy, and it's just what you do. And I've tried to set myself on that path many, many years ago.
Yeah, no, I live in a community here in South Carolina where I take a morning walk every day. That's kind of my little balancing, you know, technique when I start, kind of thing. I'd start every morning. Anyway, when I'm walking, I will encounter dozens of people in the 2 or 3 miles I walk, and everyone smiled. I don't know maybe I know maybe a handful of them, you know, but not even by name, just, you know, because of the frequency. But everyone smiles, and people drive by in a car, they wave and they smile, and it's funny because by the time I get back, you know, my smile, my face is a little tired from smiling. But I mean, it's good, you know, it's a good way to you know, to start the day.
Yeah, I had the same, you know, I get over to the gym that I go to, and it's early in the morning on a Sunday, and I'm heading in there. And the woman, you know, she's checking in. One day she says, you know, this is after a year of going the same person there at the check-in counter. And she says, I love when you come in here because you're always smiling. And then she's smiling. And I said, why not? And the other point is, why don't we smile when we're alone? Think about it. You know, it's the smile's not only to share, it's for you too. And I smile when I'm alone because I realize I never am. And that's a big concept to carry. It's that you are never alone and you're always sharing that smile, and it's an inward. So that's part of that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul going in.
Absolutely. Now, in the book, you also talk about immersive interactions with kindred spirits. I hadn't heard that phrase, or you know that term before. But I mean, by the time you finish the book, you understand what it is. But I would like for you to talk just a little bit about that. What immersive interactions are.
Yeah, it's, you know, for me, when you're connecting with others and really take the time to listen to the other person, to take in their soul. You know, a lot of us in my leadership development, I found that, you know, you have two ears, so you need to listen twice as hard. And to be immersed in someone, you're not trying to think what you're going to say next. You listen to what they're saying and their words and focus on them. And getting that interaction on that level, and when you can make a difference in someone else's life and really understand what it is that you're doing. And it's not that you're doing something to benefit yourself. You are doing it because you just want to do it. And there's a difference there.
Yeah.
I know there's a benefit that we get from helping others. And, you know, that's scientifically proven. They've got, you know, surveys, and they've actually found states where volunteerism is higher, that the longevity of people is also higher. So I think when people have a purpose later in life, volunteering is a great thing. And then being immersed in that, and these encounters with the kindred spirits, as I said, Alex the Pole Man is one. I've just encountered random people sometimes that it might be a 1 minute or 30 second encounter that has that same level to it.
Yeah, very much. Now, there's one story I want you to talk about it, and it's the story about Ken. And the reason that I want you to talk about that is because in that story, I kind of recognize that there was, you know, many of the messages or the things you want people to kind of take a look at are really contained in that one. You know, it has the volunteerism,
yeah.
It's got ego, judgment, and the ripple effect. I mean, so those are all those things. So would you mind kind of share, because I think that was a really great story.
Yeah, that was my lesson in ego, but it was also my lesson in prejudging. And, you know, my lesson out of that is, if you keep company with your ego, you're only going to have one friend. And, I had a huge lesson with Ken. I was in a volunteer organization, and at this point I was the district director. So I was, you know, kind of in a higher level. I was a past president of a local chapter, and then I went on to be more of New York State, you know, so I have to help all the chapters in New York State. And we had this conference, and this guy, he was a new president for this new chapter, and he was so cocky. He came in, and he's just talking about how he's going to get awards, and, you know, he's going to get best chapter of the year, and he's going to be president of the year. And I just was – he left a taste in my mouth. I was like acid. I just was – I said, I am not going to help this person. I'm going to let him self-destruct because I can already tell right now. And I wrote him off right then. And one of those things got, you know, the cat got out of the bag, so they say. I started telling other people how I didn't like him and how I was going to take him to the task, you know, once I heard his board on his local chapter had fallen apart, that he was a dictator, that everybody was upset with him, and you know, he was driving them all crazy. And I said, great, that's awesome. So I'm not going to help him. But I put this out there, and then people were saying, well, when are you going to sit down with him? When are you going to, you know, take him down, you know? And it was at this picnic, and it was for the region. So all the other chapters are there, and everybody keeps coming by me, and they're saying, you know, Ken's in the other room there, and you can, Dickies, you know. And they're all kind of watching, like, when I'm going to go in there. And I had every answer to everything that he would come back to me with. So if he hit me with, oh, it's their fault and this, I was going to go up one side and down the other. I had every answer to everything that he could throw at me. And I hit him with both shotgun barrels when I finally sat him down. I went up one side of him, down the other, and he just sat there and took it. And then I kind of said at the end, what do you have to say for yourself? And he looks up and he said, you're right. That was the only response I did not have something for. And that's when I realized I failed him. And I apologized. And we became friends at that point. And it was about 2 weeks later, there was a conference, and he got a bloody nose during this conference, you know. And I had gotten them too. So I said, hey, just go to your doctor and get it cauterized. You know, they'll close the blood vessels up. It's a pretty easy. I get these all the time. I've had them since I was a kid. So he went, and then we didn't see him. And then I get the news. He's got cancer. It's brain cancer. And the bloody nose was part of that. And they discovered it when he went in.
Mm-hmm.
And they removed his right eye at that point, like a week later. And so now I'm just like, really, you know, really, you know, this is how I'm going to get the lesson of misjudging, you know, and calling him a big head and all this stuff. And this is how, you know, life works and comes back to you. And, you know, he came in and I never really noticed his sense of humor. And he shows up at the regional meeting a week after they removed his eye, and he's got a patch. And he comes in and he says, is this the pirate convention? Am I late? And everybody turns around surprised, and we burst out laughing. And really, you know, that's when I got to know him and his soul. So I'm going through all this, and, you know, it was getting tough at the end. You know, he spent the rest of his time, you know, he did, he was given 6 months to live, and he actually lived for a year and a half and set new records for the particular cancer he had. And in that time, he did random acts of kindness. He would go pump gas for people. And his mom didn't even know this, his parents. I talked to his mother and father 15 years later about it, and I said, did you know he was doing that? And they read his story, and they said, no, I did not realize he was doing that out there. And it was the night before he was going to go home from the hospital. And we had a regional meeting, and everybody was saying, he's going home tomorrow night. There's nothing else they can do for him. Basically, hospice is going to be over. He wants to be at home to pass away. And they said these incredibly beautiful things about him, things that you say at a funeral, you know, of someone. And I wrote them all down. And I drove over to the hospital, and I read them to him. And I was crying, like, as hard as you can possibly do. I mean, I couldn't see the paper because my tears were just running down the ink on the paper. And he cracks a joke in the middle of this. And he says, you know, are you sure they're talking about me? And said something else. And I burst out laughing and crying, the hardest I've ever done on both halves, which is a weird feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, you got to do this to me right now. And at this point, he had huge tumors on his head. His head was just, he had like softball-sized tumors. He couldn't wear the patch anymore. And physically now, he's got the big head that I always said he had. And I've got to see it, you know. And we had this moment there, and that was the last time I saw him. And I was heading out the door at the end, and we talked for a while. He started crying, and then I did, and then I got him back, and I said, you know, this, we'll, you know, I know where you're going. I know where you're going, and you need to be a guide for me when you're there. And he said, my only regret is that I didn't get married and have kids, and I know you'll be a great dad someday. And I hadn't had children at that point. He was only in his mid-20s, and I was in my mid-20s. And, you know, that's where we left off, and he said, I'll see you later. And I turned around and I said, I know we won't see each other here, but we will see each other again. And then he said my name one more time and saluted me, and that was it, and I saluted him. And, you know, that journey, it had a lot of lessons in it. And what I did in his honor is I went back to the hospital after he passed away, and I left a little gift on the nurse's stand as a random act of kindness. And just left it, a little wrapped up thing, and said, for the nurses who took care of Ken. And I had a little, it was a teacup and some other things with an angel on it, and I just left it there. Just snuck it on the counter and walked out.
Yeah, you know, and also you, in the book, you indicate that you continue to do, you know, those in his honor, which I think is is a wonderful, wonderful thing, you know, that, you know, even though he's not here physically, you know, the impact that he made on you is being paid forward in kindness.
Right. And when I wrote the story, I reached out to his family. His mom answered the phone. It was 15 years later. And I said, I wrote this book. And she just said, when I said the title, she said, I'm tingling. The hair on my neck is standing up right now. And I said, well, there's more. I wrote Ken's, your son's story in it. And there was silence. And I said, are you still there? And she said, what, you know, this is an incredible honor. And I said, well, I'd like you to read it. And I said, it doesn't start out well in the beginning because I didn't like him. And I just want to let you know. And it took her a few days, and she read it, and I got this incredible email from her that said, I've had a hole in my soul for 15 years, and you just filled it.
Wow. Wow. That's wonderful. Boy, you know, those are the things that we can do every day, that it really doesn't take, you know, a whole bunch of effort. It just takes some understanding and compassion and thinking of, you know, being service to others, not being self-serving.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's really part of it. It's how you can travel through life and bring those moments in everything that you do. And, you know, life's hard. I can't say life is easy. And I'm human just like everyone else. I make mistakes, and you got to own them. And, you know, it's a learning experience. And that's really, you know, we have free will. We have free will here. And that's the key. And you can do whatever you want with that. And if you bring love and compassion into it, it's like there's a reciprocity that happens from that, and it just keeps coming back tenfold over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're about halfway through the show right now, Robert, so I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Robert any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you joining us in the chat room, if you have any questions that you would like for me to pose to Robert, feel free to type them in. And then we'll return in just about 2 minutes, okay? Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and, I guess, derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving and ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential because as I, just in the first few pages began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone, and with that I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
For more information or to purchase your copy of Joy Potential, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my very special guest is Robert Clancy. He is author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul, a collection of scenic views of volunteerism, transcendental encounters with kindred spirits, and lessons in compassion. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is www.guidetothesoul.com. And again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. I'd like to welcome Robert back.
Well, thanks for having me back on. It's great to be here, and let's continue on this journey.
Absolutely. Speaking of journeys. Well, now, in a couple of your stories, you had encounters with someone with disabilities, and that they seemed to kind of yield an important soul hitch. There was Jerry in the wheelchair in the elevator, and then there was also the student with cerebral palsy. So I'm wondering, do you think that there is something that we should kind of keep in mind, you know, as far as opportunity with individuals who have disabilities, as far as maybe creating some of these soul hitches?
Yeah, you know what? I have a very unique perspective. I'm very inspired by people who rise above everything, because each of us are our own, you know, it's what we're born into or whatever happens to us. And there was also Chris Waddell, who was the Olympian in the story, and he actually had an accident. He was supposed to be in the regular Olympics, and actually he ended up in the Paralympics because while skiing he broke his spine. And I got to interview him, and he said, it's not about what happens to you. It's about what you do with what happens to you that matters. And I don't view people as having like a disability, because I think everyone has a unique gift that they can exploit for the greater good of humanity. And you just have to find out what that is. And I've seen it. People with what most people consider a disability take that to a level of inspiration to others and making a difference out there that is beyond anything. So that's really important to me. And these are a couple of those stories where I feel someone has transcended that, what people would consider a disability. And that's just beyond words for me of what that means.
Yeah, there. You know, I had a guest on my show. Her name is Peggy Easton, and she is a cabaret singer in New York. She's blind, and she calls herself the Chocolate Diva. She's on Facebook, you know, posting through Siri, you know, and she is out there, you know, living life to its fullest, experiencing things that, you know, I would think, you know, that might be a little bit frightening if one was blind, but she just does not let that, you know, hinder her in the least. And every time I read about one of her experiences, you know, I just think that is just so wonderful, you know, to be able to just do that and throw fear aside.
Exactly. And you hit on the most important word, fear, because I've lived the last 30 years without it, and I don't have fear or doubt. You know, we get worried occasionally, but my worry is not for me. It's how other people handle their grief and fear and doubt. And that's kind of where my worry is. You know, there's a lot of things going on in the world that people think, oh, my God, the whole world's ending. This stuff's been going on for thousands of years, and we just get a lot more of it because we're more connected, we're more wired, and news travels so much faster. They say like the average business person 100 years ago would make one important decision every month, you know, and now we're making 100 of those important decisions every single day, or, you know, more than that. And, you know, you feel closed in by negativity. So it's surrounding yourself with that, knowing that you can transcend that fear and doubt. And that's an important message that I hope comes through from my books and my messages that I do also daily on Facebook. It's really they reach a worldwide audience, and there's people from every country that follow those posts. And every day something positive is out there.
Yeah, you have quite a following there, which is great. Now, the one thing that I kind of just took notice of when I read those two stories about Jerry and about the teen. Well, with Jerry, in the story, you talk about initially a hesitancy to kind of interact with him, you know, I mean, and then versus the teen, you know, I mean, she came to your event, you kind of went right to her and, you know, kind of embraced her in a sense. So, you know, because I think a lot of people out there sometimes still feel reluctant to engage, you know, with someone whose disability kind of makes them anxious or nervous in a way. So what would you say to someone out there? I mean, was my reading of that true, that there was that little hesitancy and then shift?
Yes, there was, and that was an earlier encounter. So Jerry happened before I encountered mm-hmm. the teen, and mm-hmm. Jerry helped me transcend that. So again, that's one of those soul hitches that I had, that I no longer saw him in a wheelchair. You know, he was just Jerry. And what happened on that is I got into an elevator, so it's kind of a tight space. And it was kind of awkward at first because you kind of walk in, you're not expecting, you know, that and you know, the person. And, you know, I wanted to offer help, so I'm doing, you know, they ask him what floor, and he's got his hand extended, and, you know, to shake my hand. And by instinct, I shook his hand, and he said, before I could introduce myself, he said, "You're Bob. I know, you know." And I looked at him, and I didn't recognize him. I said, "Where do I, you know, do I know you from somewhere?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I know you from volunteering with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. You worked the phones for the last 4 years at the telethon." And I had to think about it for a minute, and I realized, yeah, I guess I have. And I just did it because I was having fun. You know, it was, you're on TV, they give you a pizza and cookies and stuff, and, you know, right. It's just a fun experience. Went and just did it and went home. And he then told me, and by this point I got off on the wrong floor with him, so we're standing in the hallway of the state building down in Albany, New York. And he said, "I had a friend of mine who had muscular dystrophy who just passed away, and he was 24. And at the time I was 27, and I thought, what did I do with the 3 years this person didn't have? My whole face kind of, it was written on there." And he said, whoa, "I'm not telling you this to make you feel bad. I can see by your face that I may have done that. I'm telling you this because he would have died when he was 14. And every day that he lived past his expectancy, he thought of the people who volunteered, who helped his life." And it was a powerful message, because I realized at that moment I was one of them. And Jerry stopped in the hallway, and as I was going, he called out to me one more time, and he said, "You know, without people like you around, there wouldn't be people like me around." And I kept that in for about 6 months. I didn't tell anyone. I walked back to my office, and I thought, that's one of those moments. That's one of those soul hitches. That's one of those experiences that it just changed me, because I thought of all the times that I volunteered, and then I thought of all the people that do things like that, and how people are still thinking of something you did 10 years ago, and they're thinking about you, and you didn't even give it a second thought on that, and they remember. And that's a powerful thing to carry. And, you know, having that did transcend me that day. And so that when I encounter people with that, you know, I see past any of that. And it's just, I embrace them as a person, because that's all we are. We're all people. And there's a different level that happens there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the one part I also liked about that story was that, you know, when you went to meet your friend for lunch, you had wanted to go outside and enjoy the day, and he couldn't. And if you were able to do that, if you did that, you would probably have missed that whole encounter.
Exactly. So that's the other thing, like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when they're hitchhiking and they keep getting further from getting the answers and where they need to be. Something pushes you where you need to be. And I mm-hmm. believe that that encounter was not by chance. And here's a follow-up to it. A few years ago, I went back and I started volunteering again, and it was actually the last year that they had the telethon, because they don't do it on our local station anymore. And I'm sitting there, and I have these two young ladies on each side of me, and I'm telling them, you know, they asked me how I got involved, and I told them the story about Jerry and how, you know, I wanted to come back in his honor. Those were his granddaughters.
Wow.
Sitting to my left and right. And they said, wow. my grandfather never told me about this. And I said, that's because he was a special person. And they did get to read the story in the book, you know, the family and his son and everybody. And it was great connecting with them. But, you know, here I am years later. And I guess he had passed away a few years earlier, too. So, you know, I had this beautiful story, and it just continues to give. And I don't think that was by accident that both of them were sitting next to me.
No, I'm sure it wasn't, you know. And you know, that's something that they will certainly carry on. So, boy, now, there was also one other area where soul hitches can happen, and that is when we go out of our comfort zone. Now, there was a really cute story about you as Spidey.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of tried to, you know, just let it go without visualizing the Spider-Man outfit. But you know, would you mind sharing the shift in perspective that you went through with that? Because, I mean, you know, that there's a lot of times that, you know, we'll be, you know, asked to do things that are beyond our comfort zone that we sometimes say no.
Yeah, that was actually one of my I've known that friend. It's a very close friend of mine. We've known each other since we were two. And his son was about 4 years old. And this is not this is only a few years ago, by the way. This is not like 20 years ago.
Okay.
So imagine, you know, your best friend contacting you saying, you know, my son, I've been pumping him up for 3 months that Spider-Man's coming to his party. I hired a guy who's coming in to do it. And, you know, he said, you know, so I'm on the phone and he says, you know, I know you know martial arts, and the guy canceled at the last minute. So in my mind, I'm thinking he wants me to go beat the tar out of this guy. You will be Spider-Man. And he said, no, I bought a professional Spider-Man costume and I think it will fit you. And that's when I went white. And I'm thinking, there's no way I'm wearing a skin-tight suit at a four-year-old's birthday party. And, you know, I'm familiar with the comic books and that, but mm-hmm. I was never really into it. So, you know, my, you know, understanding of Spider-Man is not as deep as some, you know, hardcore fans there. So he's talking to me, and finally I agreed to have him just at least drop the costume off. So I'm at my house. I unfurrow it. I made sure my wife and my son were not home at the time, and I slipped this thing on. And I walk past the mirror in the hallway, and I stop, and I look back, and it's like, wow, I do kind of look like Spider-Man. And maybe I am Spider-Man. So I call him, and I said, all right, it fits. What time at your house? Oh, it's not at my house. It's at one of those Chuck E. Cheese-type places. And I said, no. But I already agreed at this point, so... And you can't drive a car with a Spider-Man. So when I tell the story, I had to change in the car around, you know, a couple parking lots away from the building. People are like, why didn't you just wear it and drive over there? You can't hold the steering wheel. It's like a body glove that covers your hands. There are no gloves. It's just the whole thing is a glove. And trust me, if I could have driven, I would have tried. So I don't know how Superman does this in a phone booth, but I was in the back of a Land Rover and trying to slip this thing on, and I'm thinking I'm going to get arrested. And you know, then I got to walk through two business parking lots to get to the Chuck E. Cheese place because his son, I had to hide the car and everything so they wouldn't. He was very smart. His son was extremely sharp on that. So if I was at the party and left, he would know. And he said, if you let him know or he figures it out, it's going to devastate him. So it's like, you know, figuring out who Santa is. So I go into the party, And the whole place goes crazy. They got Spider-Man music going. I'm doing martial arts stuff, and all the kids are coming around me, and they're asking me all questions. And I had to do a lot of research on all the villains and know everything because I didn't want to have any slip-ups. So I'm talking about the Green Lantern and everything. And the kids are treating me like a giant teddy bear. It was kind of a weird, you know, you're just like, wow, they really, you know, they were all hugging me. And it was just a lot of love in the room as far as the kids, you know, admiring you as a superhero. And then this one kid comes over and he looks right into my eyes, and it's one of the other children that I know. And he looks very close at my mask, and then he says, "I know who he is." And I'm like, no, don't say anything. And he said, "No, I'm telling everybody." And he gets all the little kids, you know, all the kids, their attention is like right on. He goes, I'm gonna tell everybody who he is." And I'm like, "Hey, Johnny, don't say anything about who Spider-Man's secret identity is, because you're going to devastate my best friend's son for life." And he yells out at the top of his lungs, "He's Peter Parker." And at that moment, I was galvanized. I realized I am Spider-Man and I am a superhero. So I squat down in the Spider-Man pose, and they all gather in, and I say, "Do you know what the most powerful word is in the whole world?" And their eyes go big. And I said, "It's love. And you need to use that word every day." And then I said, "And you need to hug your parents and tell them you love them and everybody that you encounter." And they're looking like they're making notes on a pad. You know, they're going back, "Okay, we got the love. And love is a good word. Okay, we got that." hugs are good. And I said, "You know, and clean your rooms, and you need to take out the garbage and be good and do your schoolwork." And the parents are all nodding their heads. So I go back to my car, I change, and now I'm just me again. You know, I'm just the regular Joe. And I walk into the place, and all the parents are there, and they're crying. And they said, "That was the most beautiful thing I've seen someone do for my child."
No.
And I realized, you know, yeah. I get a little emotional, because I realized, you know, I was a superhero, and I am, and I can still be that superhero. And we all have it. It's finding your gift, exploiting it for the greater good of humanity. The cape and mask are always optional accessories, but a kind heart is always essential. And that's what I learned from that. And you know what? I still have the professional Spider-Man costume. I have put it on again. And I plan on, you know, I got some other martial artists who have, you know, this is a top of the line. It's a movie replica costume. So it is
It's
dead on. And it does fit you like a glove, by the way. And you know how many sit-ups you have to do to get in that thing.
Yeah,
so it's a good motivator, but I want to go to, like, children's hospitals or things like that. And I have some other martial artists and just bring the whole team over and, you know, and bring them in the Ultimate Alliance. And we got Batman, we have Captain America, and they've got really good costumes. So do some good with it, you know, and why not?
Yeah.
And I can still be a superhero.
Exactly. Well, that's wonderful. You know, and it's one of those things where, you know, you definitely went outside your comfort zone, you know, to do that. And, you know, you just, you went for it. And you know, the resulting ripple, you know, has, I'm sure, you know, it's probably still being told today, you know, by many of those. So.
Right.
Now, in a couple of the stories, you know, it seemed like the message of, you know, to volunteer, that it's need, you know, it's important to do it without the need to have, you know, recognition for the act. Now, there was one story about your son, Sean, helping a kid who was being bullied. But your son didn't tell you about it, but someone else did. Which is, I think is such a wonderful thing, you know. And in the comment, I think he said that he made to you was, "Well, that's what you taught him to do," you know. So it's like, you know, that's good. But, you know, in today's environment, in today's society, particularly with some younger people, there just seems to be this need to be recognized, you know, for anything that they do. And, you know, it's like, how many likes did my Facebook page get, or, you know, how many people are following me, you know, that kind of thing. How many selfies can I take? You know, is this, you know, do you think that this is a trend that we should be not necessarily be concerned about, but that's something that we should maybe pay attention to? And if parents, if their parents listening and their child is kind of wrapped up in that, is there anything that you can tell them to maybe help shift maybe the need for that self recognition?
Yeah, I, you know, and I'm a parent too of a 16-year-old now, so he definitely has, you know, a little flavor of that, and I've encountered that those things. But, you know, it's part, I think, technology, and I love technology. I'm a programmer, but it can, as much as it can connect us, it can also separate us. And you'll see two people sitting next to each other and texting back and forth, and, you know, they're checking how popular they are and those things. And a lot of times, you know, if you feed into that, it can actually create depression, because you're looking at what's a false front sometimes on other people and how great their life is, and you're trying to compare yourself. And the only thing you need to compare yourself to is you. And I have something at not only our office, but what I love about martial arts is you're always competing against yourself, not others. You're trying to better yourself. And that's probably the one piece of advice that I've always given to my son. And it's not about how many friends or fans or whatever you have. It's the quality of your message to them and the quality of what you have and the message, your internal messages, and how your inner voice speaks to yourself. And a lot of people have these body images that of themselves that are negative. And I actually did some work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and I had to do a keynote speech. And I thought that the audience was comprised of a lot of the counselors and the families of someone who lost someone to suicide. But there were actually a lot of people who had survived suicide. And this one young woman came over to me, absolutely beautiful, you know, person inside and out. And I'm, you know, I thought she was one of the counselors, and so I was talking to her, and she said, "No, I've attempted suicide about 3 times," and I was shocked. I said,
"Yeah,
you're just a beautiful soul. Why would you do that?" And it was her image of herself inside, and that's really what it comes down to: is your dialogue with yourself. In my new book, I have the difference in the new book between the first book and what I learned is a lot of people read my stories in the first book, but they said, "I saw how you did it, but how do I do that?" So in the new book, I've added these decodes at the end of the chapters. So there's 3 things, and then it's how to implement things in your life, things that I just do. And when I started telling people what I do, they never thought of it. Like I alluded to it earlier, smiling by yourself. You know, do you smile when you're alone? And how important is that to your happiness, to your image? And it's writing down, you know, what you have gratitude for, or just thinking about it. You know, there people can look at things very negatively, and I always look for the silver lining in everything, because no matter what happens, there's always something good that comes out of it, no matter how bad it might seem.
Yeah, you know, the decodes, you know, that's such a wonderful benefit for application, you know, because, like you say, sometimes people wouldn't think of how to apply it. And even if they don't, you know, use the exact action that you list, it may trigger something within themselves that, oh, I can do this, you know, which is kind of like that, but it works for me, kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, now, gosh, we only have a few more minutes left, but one thing, you know, what would you say to someone who feels that they just don't have the time, you know, to volunteer? And again, keeping the broader perspective of, you know, doing, you know, reaching out and helping another person, but they just feel that they don't have the time. I mean, that they're just so entrenched in what they're doing.
That's a great question, and I've actually had many people ask me, because I have multiple businesses I run. I have a Facebook page that I have to, every day I write, and I have not missed a day in 3.5 years of posting some inspirational thing that I've written. Volunteerism becomes easy when it becomes the language of your life. And what I mean by that is, if you thread it into your life, it's not extra. So, for instance, my son has been in Cub Scouts and then in Boy Scouts. So I volunteered because I get to spend time with a family member. So it really doesn't become extra. It's just more time that I have with my son. Mm-hmm. If I'm into biking or mountain biking or kayaking or whatever, I may have a hobby. I can then turn that into a volunteer thing by saying, why don't I run a spinning class for underprivileged kids or at the shelter for battered women and children and do something there that ties into something that I already enjoy doing. And that way it's still, I'm doing what I enjoy, but it's also benefiting someone else. And if you have absolutely no time, everybody has time to share a smile. So there's no excuse there that you can't put it out there and make a difference.
That's right. That's great. Well, now, Cass, is there anything, maybe any final words that you may want to give the listeners, something that maybe I didn't cover or maybe just some wonderful Clancy words of wisdom to share with people?
Well, I have a couple. One is, and this is something that I wrote, so it's, you know, there's a few things that when you're out and doing volunteer work, and this is a from my book, you may never get to know the people you've helped or how many people you've touched by being you. You may never fully know the love you've bestowed in their hearts through your kindness. You may never know how much you mean to them, even if your contribution to their life was a small one. You may never get a chance to hear all the praise these people have for you, but just know that you've created a positive ripple in the universe, and that ripple is endless. And I view everything that way, that everyone that we touch, it just ripples out, and it's infinite. It's like a single note is played here in kindness, and it becomes a symphony in heaven. And all that music is there for you to listen to for the rest of eternity when you cross over. And I that's my personal belief on how you bring the circle of that love around yourself.
Wow, that's great. You know, when I read that in your book, I just loved that one. I mean, to me, it was, I just reread that several times. You know, it was like, you know, because there's so much truth into that, you know, and again, it takes the away from the fact that you just don't know, you know, the effect that you have. And you know, it really shouldn't matter to you. It's just as long as you do, you know, spread that compassion, you know, volunteer, giving to others in whatever way you can.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I do hope that you keep me in mind and come back when Soul Cypher is ready.
Absolutely. I got about 90% done, so it's right there. I just got to publish it out. My book proposal's out right now, so I'm waiting on the literary agent, and it should be out in 2016 at some point, and I'm sure we'll connect when that's ready.
Oh, that would be great, Robert. Well, thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed our discussion and enjoyed your book as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and we'll connect up later. I've got this out on my page, so we'll get some people on the replay too.
Absolutely. And I do want to let everyone know that if you go to Robert's webpage, which is www.guidetothesoul.com, you'll see all of his social media little icons and join him and everything. Follow him. So, okay, again, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. Have a good night. Yep, take
thank
care.
Thank you as well. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Robert Clancy, author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul, a collection of scenic views of volunteerism, transcendental encounters with kindred spirits, and lessons in compassion. And again, as I mentioned, www.guidetothesoul.com, and there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again... Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME.
You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.